You're listening to a podcast on the Audio Boom Network. This is A Mindful Life with me, Dave Thomas. Thank you for downloading this edition of the program. I do hope you enjoy it.
My name is Karen Davis and I am 57 years of age. I'm a former detective constable of Lancashire Constabulary, hence how you and I know each other. We're speaking to you from Cray, a small village about 5 miles from Sennybridge in Mid Wales, Powys, which is home for me at this moment in time. I grew up in Wales, about an hour really from where I'm living now. I was born in Abergavenny, went to school in Abergavenny, and went off to university in Manchester and had various careers before.
What did you study?
I studied English and theatre studies, but English was the main sort of thrust of my degree. I guess I was of that generation. I was one of the first in my family to go to university because we were working class Welsh. So it was a big thing. And I guess I don't feel that I had much of an option around whether I was going or not. I was going because my parents were so excited about it and going. I think I wanted to take a year out. Mm. I think I wanted to take a year out, even though that probably wasn't as popular then as it became later. A year out seemed to be like an acceptable thing, didn't it? You do your A-levels, you take a year out, go off travelling. And so I think I wanted to do that, but that wasn't an option. So and I was living in a very Welsh life, very small town, and went off up to the big metropolis that was Manchester, which you know well. Mm-hmm. And did 3 years of my degree, went to London, went to drama school, spent a number of years performing. And then when that became something that wasn't enjoyable anymore, I joined the police.
Right. I mean, I had a similar path in so much as that I was doing something completely different and then I joined the police. So what was your reason?
What were you doing before you joined the police?
I was a photographer.
That's right.
And certain circumstances transpired within the photographic field that made work harder to come by. So that was part of the reason of joining the police. But what were your incentives?
I really don't think I thought it through. I really don't think I thought it through. Do you know what happened? I went to drama school because I always wanted to be an actress, and I went to Manchester, did an English degree, theatre studies was the subsidiary degree, and decided, right, I'm going to go to drama school in London after my degree because I'm going to be an actress and I'm going to be at the Royal Shakespeare Company. That's in my little head, that's what was going to happen. So I got into drama school, auditioned for a postgraduate year in drama school in London, and did that year, and it was brilliant, and I loved living in London, and it was everything. It was just so cool, you know, I was really enjoying myself. But then obviously that year came to an end when you were a student, and then you have to start making a living in a let's face it, in a profession that's very hard to be noticed in, and I had to get my equity card. We ended up, a group of us from drama school ended up forming a children's theatre company, and we got 2 summer seasons at Pothelly Butlins. And those 2 summer seasons allowed us to get our full-time equity card, because you couldn't work you couldn't work professionally without an equity card. And then by the end of the 2 summer seasons at Butlins, my best friend and I, she and I were doing some singing, some busking and some singing, and we decided that we wanted to be cabaret artists. So we went off and decided this is what we're going to do. And long story short, we ended up working as a female singing duo, and we worked all over the world. We worked for the Combined Service Entertainment, the Forces. We've been to Bosnia when Colonel Bob Stewart was there with the Forces. Yeah. We've been to the Falklands. We've been all over the place doing that, and we ended up working on cruise ships in the Middle East for about 4 or 5 years, and got a job at summer season at Blackpool, at the Winter Gardens and the Blackpool Tower. By now, we were both coming into our 30s, and I think we would just had enough of like the whole sequins and blonde hair and being, you know, treated like commodities because we were two intelligent women, but we'd had a great time travelling and getting paid for it. So Julia decided, this is it, I want to do something different. And she actually applied for British Airways and whilst we were in our last summer season. And I thought, what shall I do then? Oh, I'll apply to the police. This is the funniest thing. So I applied to Lancashire because we were in Blackpool. And I thought, well, I'll start here. And I just kept getting through each. So I went to, then in those days, because I joined in 95, so I would have been in 94 being going for my interview process. So there was an assessment day, uh-huh. and you went for the assessment day. And I remember people saying to me, a handful of people saying, this is all I've ever wanted to do. I've only ever wanted to be a police officer. Yeah. And I felt a bit of an imposter, really, because I was there with my cabaret hair, because I was still doing cabaret. And seriously, it's from sequins to sirens. That's what I call it. And I got through that. And then there's a book.
You've got the title of the book.
Yeah, the book. Or if, because we were at Blackpool, something like sequins, sirens and seagulls. And I just kept getting through each stage. And I'll never forget Julia, my working partner at the time when we were singing, taking me for the final interview. You know, you do the interview with the Chief Con and whoever else was, I can't remember who was there. And then they sit you outside the office afterwards, don't they? And then they call you back in to say whether you're successful or not. They call me back in and said, yes, you're successful. This was like in the September of 94. And I was absolutely in shock. I just remember going outside to Jules, who was waiting in the car at headquarters in the car park for me. He said, I'm in. I've got the job. I got my starting date, which was the 16th of January 95. And we were doing a Christmas season in Bahrain. We went off to Bahrain to do cabaret for Christmas. I flew back from there with Jules on the 11th, 12th, 13th of January and joined the cops on the 16th. So in answer, that was a very long rambling answer to your question, but in answer to your question, there was no forethought. It was just a plucked out of the air idea. You've got me questioning my position.
Am I just filling out? So how long were you in the police?
Just under 22 years.
And we worked together, didn't we, in St Anne's?
Yeah, we did.
Both early on in our careers. Yeah. You've had quite a varied career.
Yeah.
It kind of started to go wrong, I suppose, didn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting, really, isn't it? Because when you just said those words, it started to go wrong. I wonder when that really did truly start happening.
I think it happens long before you realize it's happened. You just don't see it.
Yeah, that I guess that's what I was going to say, because I went off sick in 2012, went off with stress, but only for a few months, and that was the first time I'd ever been off with stress. And you know yourself, it's a big thing to go off with stress, isn't it, in the police
force. There's a lot of stigma.
Yeah.
Even today, there's still stigma.
There is, you think?
About going off with...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, going off with an injury on duty, you know, you were assaulted or you were apprehending a suspect, then you're held in high regard, I think, aren't you?
Yeah.
But if you go off with stress, it's almost, I don't know, I still feel this. I think people think that it's a sign of weakness.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think I felt that it was a sign of weakness. I felt that like I'd failed, but it was a bit like it was just a complete and utter brick wall, really. But It really was. It was like a car hitting a brick wall. There was absolutely no way I was able to function at that point when I went off. So I had to go off.
Are you able to tell me what it was that caused you to go off?
I think it was I don't think it's any one event.
Sure, yeah.
Well, I say that. I'd been on child abuse investigation for a number of years. Mm. So and personally, I found the responsibility of juggling that workload daily, spinning plates, very, very stressful. And also the nature of the work. It goes without saying it's difficult work,
yeah.
Isn't it?
I mean, certainly.
You've been in that position.
I'm in the same field. And in my experience, and certainly my own experience anyway, it wasn't just something work-related. There was other things as well in my life, some personal, some historical, and they kind of all came together.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of people, that's probably how it starts or how it happens.
Yeah.
There are people, aren't there, that will go to a singular event that is that traumatic that it affects them. But for me, certainly, and it sounds like you as well, it was just that drip, drip, and it was just slowly building up until basically you're full, aren't you? You're saturated.
So. I mean, I do remember I was also a family liaison officer. I moved from child protection to CID. You know, I asked for a move eventually because it was just getting a bit too much. So I eventually was moved on to CID, but I was also a family liaison officer. And I think what really did was the straw that broke the camel's back. We dealt with two domestic related murders pretty much back to back as FLO, as family liaison officer, and they were, even by policing standards, they were quite brutal and they were difficult. And it was that that they were the actual, I could name those two events as the actual, this is it, I can't cope, this is really affecting me. But like you said, there'd been a drip drip effect up to that point, and undoubtedly there is personal stuff you know, that really does affect you. But I do think that it's difficult when you're a police officer because you're so totally immersed in the day-to-day job. You are immersed in it, aren't you? You don't stop and look up.
Well, yeah, you are immersed, and I think you normalise it as well.
Yeah, of course,
because
you do.
Because if you don't, you go pop.
Yeah.
You have to tell yourself it's normal, which is really, in hindsight, it's the worst thing you can do to yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Because ultimately you do go pop.
Yeah, that's really interesting you saying that, Dave, because I think somewhere along the way, during therapy sessions or a therapy session, that the lady that was my therapist, still is at the time, did say to me that about, you know, normalising situations that are not normal, even if you are a police officer. I know you sign up. Well, I don't think I knew what I was signing up for. Did you?
I had an idea, but the extremes.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Still take you by surprise.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I knew what I knew I was signing up to an emergency service, and it would be. But I think the extremes are those things that, as an individual, take you completely by surprise. Yeah.
I mean, I was an FLO as well on traffic, and do you know? I mean, obviously, I went off ill from work as well with stress and trauma. You know, at the time, I was 10 years on traffic, and I never once thought at the time it was affecting me. Never once.
You didn't?
No. I didn't even think, this is bad, it's affecting me, but I'll keep a lid on it, or I'll try and normalise. It really didn't affect me. And it was only when I went off work with stress and I looked back, I realised that was part of the problem.
Yeah.
You know, and it did, and it had affected me.
Yeah.
Which is quite scary, that, because I was completely unaware of that.
Yeah.
I really was. So, I mean, the other thing we talked about, didn't we, was just the nature of police work is that you, and I think this is a trauma and stress in itself, irrelevant of whether you've been to some jobs that have caused you problems, is the fact that you never know what's coming next, do you? And we talked about that, doing either with a phone call or through the radio.
Yeah.
And that kind of makes you hypervigilant, which is a stress in itself.
Yeah. And I think you and I talked yesterday about actually going to jobs sometimes you know, if I'm honest now, and I've thought about this a lot, going to jobs like maybe single crewed on nights where there was some violence at a scene at a house, and you could be first on the scene, couldn't you? Being frightened on my way there, and to say that now seems, you know, like I would never have admitted to that at the time, that I was frightened or that I was scared or I didn't want to get hurt, I didn't want to get assaulted, I didn't want to get into a fight, I didn't want to.
I think with hindsight, and the police service has changed so much, hasn't it, in the last 25 years, I don't think anybody wouldn't be human if they said they weren't scared. Everybody was scared. They just didn't want to admit it because again, it's this persona, this stigma, isn't it, that if you say I'm scared, then you're seen as weak.
Yeah.
I know people, I've heard officers in the past say, I don't want to work with that person because they think they're weak.
That's right.
And that's
right.
Awful.
And you feel that you have to, well, I say I certainly felt that I had to give a good account of myself.
Yes.
And that meant, certainly in uniform, getting stuck in, you know. And when things were violent, or when there was stuff going on in the, you know, I mean, you know what the streets, you know what Blackpool town centre was like on the weekends when all the clubs were kicking out.
It
was the Wild West. there was a lot of funny things that happened, and there's a lot of humour, but there was also a lot of. And you could get hurt.
Yes.
And you could get hurt, couldn't you?
Right, okay. Well, I'm not going to ask you about the therapies that you had, but what were some of the things that you did that you found that helped you?
So coming, you know, that we were, you yourself know, you get sent to occupational health and you get sent for certain interventions when you are in that stressful, when you're off with stress. I have to say that for me, I found those interventions quite clinical at the time.
For me, there was no going, I appreciate I've got to do the talking, you can't do it for me, and you can't give me the answers, but you need a guide sometimes, and there was none of that. There was no guidance, and it was just set there in silence sometimes, and it didn't work for me at all.
Yeah.
But then when I did have counselling the second time, when I did go off, and strangely enough, I actually said, I want a woman counsellor.
I don't
know what it was, but I just couldn't talk to a bloke, whether that was issues about with my father or anything.
Yeah.
But, and it worked.
Yeah.
And it was better. And it was bloody hard work.
Yeah. It is.
It really was draining. And I know you said you've come back from sessions and you've just fallen asleep for a couple of hours.
Yeah.
I was the same. And those first couple of sessions, and it's like you're trying to make sense of the bud inside your head, and then you slowly start to get a bit of clarity, don't you?
Yeah.
And then that's when it hurts, because you have to revisit the thing that hurt you.
Yeah.
And then you have to deal with it.
Yeah.
So that's the upsetting bit.
Yeah.
But you do feel better afterwards.
Yeah, you do.
And that is the thing with therapy. And
you have to be honest as well, though. I think for me, there was the utter need to be honest and to have integrity around the therapy.
Yes.
The therapeutic relationship between me and my therapist. You know, to be completely honest about what was going on. Because I think you spend so many years masking things that are problematic for you.
It's a hard habit to break.
They are, whether they're childhood issues. So you mask them, you're not honest about your feelings, you're not honest about what's happening for you. And then it's so interesting to then be to gravitate towards a job like the police force, where you do spend a lot of time masking the horror of your feelings about what you're dealing with, not being able to go home to talk about it. So it's almost like you carry on doing that.
And then how you deal with that as well is all dependent on how your own upbringing as a child.
Yeah.
I strongly believe in that. I read somewhere the other day, it's not a child that's hurt causes the child the trauma, it's being alone with that hurt and not being able to deal with it.
Yeah.
That's what causes the trauma.
Yeah.
And I suppose if, you know, have kids, we have a problematic childhood, we kind of grow up as children, don't we?
Yeah,
we never sort of develop emotionally. So then we deal with our adult experiences as children.
Yeah.
Certainly, yeah. If that was the case for me.
Yeah.
Once you realise that there's nobody coming to rescue you.
Yeah, yeah.
That's when it kind of switches on. You think, right, I've got to do this for me now.
Mine was an utter breakdown. It was complete, you know, mentally, emotionally, physically. It was probably, I can quite honestly say I really don't want to go through anything like that again.
No.
And I probably won't, because I've got, you know, things are in a different place and I've got a lot more understanding about what happened. I've got a lot more understanding about and tools to sort of help me deal with, you know, overwhelm and, you know, when things get out of hand for me. But it was an utter hit in the brick wall. And it was such, I don't know, I don't have words to describe how it felt to this day.
I don't think
you know,
you can.
I don't have words to describe what that was like. And that was, you know, and where are we now? We're 2022. And I would say it's only possibly in the last 18 months that I've really started to heal and recover. You know.
And what do you put that down to?
Well, I moved back to Wales. I've been back in Wales for just over 4 years now. So when I was ill health retired in 2015, it didn't seem tenable for me to stay, because my relationship had broken down. The home that I was living in, I'd moved out of. I wasn't in the job that I'd loved any longer, so I felt quite isolated. So I thought, I can't stay here. I don't feel like I belong here. know, you know, everything's changed and I don't feel kind of safe here, I suppose. So I just gravitated back home to Wales, and because I, for no other reason than I just couldn't think of anywhere else to go, so I came back to Wales to family. Lived a bit of nomadic lifestyle for a while, back and forth to Lancashire, going and visiting my dad in Malta. Wales was my base, but it wasn't my home. And then a couple of three years ago or so, I actually looked for somewhere to live, which is, I came here to Cray. I live in a small village. My friends own a farm where we're here now. I live right next door to them, and they had a little farm cottage for rent, and it was in the middle of nowhere, and I just thought, I'm going to go and live there and see how that goes. And it slowly it's developed into being one of the best moves I ever made.
It's fair to say now, isn't it, that I kind of almost see them as family, don't I?
Oh, they are. They've been brilliant. They've been absolutely amazing people, Kerry and Julie, that own the farm here, and they've diversified into tourism, so they've got eco-lodges and... So I help them out with, you know, it's not taxing work, but it's, I feel engaged. I feel like I need to do something, but I can't. My brain, because of the post-traumatic stress disorder, it really has been problematic for me with my memory retention, with my, you know, easily overwhelmed, you know, not being able to sort of listen to instructions and remember them. So it really has caused some physiological issues.
Yeah, absolutely. You know.
Here's to the good days, here's to the sorrows. If this is a mistake, I know about tomorrow. I don't wanna fight no more, cause I don't feel the need no more, no. Just wanna make it stop.
So, you're now living on a farm and helping out with all the things that you do on a farm. And like a lot of us, I suppose, that have gone through this, you want to give something back. Maybe it's the public service side of us that made us join the COPS in the first place. But I know you're looking to do some retreats in the near future.
Well, Kerry and Julie, who have this wonderful accommodation here, are very sort of forward-thinking individuals. And they just, I just think that we want to offer, especially since COVID has come along and mental health has become even more of even more important, it's always been important, but it's at the forefront now, isn't it, again? And I just think what we're looking at something that's called encilio. Encilio is the Welsh word to retreat or withdraw. I think that it's tailoring packages, stays for public service sector, NHS, police, and anybody really that needs time to just press the pause button and stop and rewind. But it's for me, it's things around being out and what you and I have done an amazing walk today, haven't we? That's why you're here, because you're walking, and we've been out in the Beacons today, and I feel that for me that was so therapeutic being up there and walking and seeing those views. So
and walking with a group of people that you've never met before.
Never, no.
And walked on routes that some of them you've never walked before. So, and that is the beauty of it, isn't it?
And I want to get people... I know that when I went to police treatment centres, which were brilliant, I went to Octorada, and I'm not saying that they were brilliant. They were very good, and I got a lot from it. I really did. But this is something slightly different. I don't feel like I want... I don't feel that there's a need to have people come and feel that they've got to open up and leave everything here, you know, feel that they have to explain why they're feeling. I think that if you can just get people out walking, wild swimming, building fire pits, experiencing the beauty of this natural environment, which is what I've done, in itself it can have a massive somatic release so that your body and your mind...
I suppose it's a bad analogy, but I'm thinking like a rescue dog. You don't just throw a lead round its neck and take it for a walk, do you? These days and weeks of coaxing, and you're right what you say. Yeah. Like, you can't just expect people to come on a retreat or a course and just open up.
No. Well, I know that from my experience with, you know, we've got yoga, meditation, qigong, you know, all of that will be available, and it's practitioners who have had a lot of experience of working with people that have suffered with trauma, and I've had lots and lots of sessions with these guys, and it's amazing because it works. It's putting you back in touch with how your body's feeling, and giving you coping mechanisms and tools, and I'm really at a stage now, Dave, where I don't feel that I want to talk anymore about any of it.
It's time to be happy and get on with life.
And I want to walk and swim and, you know, practice all these mindfulness techniques that I'm learning. Yeah. And I think if you could have those, we talked yesterday, didn't we, about when somebody's broken, it's almost too late to interject with all of these methods.
Yeah.
We should be coming in early intervention.
Yeah, and then the other scary thing, I suppose, is the fact that you'll never get rid of your trauma. I was like, you'll always have that trauma day.
Yeah.
But you just have to adjust your attitude to it.
Yeah.
And not pay it the relevance that you did before.
But the reason I can do that, and probably you too, is because I have learned over the last few years techniques and mechanisms and, you know, things I've understood that going walking for hours or these are the things that help me personally, individually.
Yeah.
So that's where I need to focus my energies to allow my mind to quieten down and to be able to cope.
Yeah.
So it isn't with talking therapy. This is what works for me, putting my body through this kind of physical reconnection with nature.
Well, I'm sure your retreats will be really well received, knowing you as I do. So, Karen Davis, thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for chatting.